Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, the Dark Horse of the New World Order. We're talking with Patrick Wood, the author of Technocracy Rising. Folks, it's been a fantastic 2 hours so far. We got 1 hour left and still a number of issues to get into. We left off with transforming law, and we're going through the table of contents in the book. We have a few chapters left: Transforming Energy, the Global Smart Grid, the Total Surveillance Society, Transforming Humanity, Transforming Christianity, and the appendix in there, the Earth Charter, as well as Taking Action. Mr. Wood, we have a lot to cover. I want to turn it over to you and let you cover what you think is most important in this last hour.
Oh, wow. We have covered a lot of ground already, you know, and I feel like, gee, we just started, didn't we?
Feels like that.
Oh, my gosh. I know. There's just so much. I felt that at times that, you know, if I could stand up and just start speaking and spill everything out that's in my brains, it might well take 8 or 9 or 10 hours to do it. But there's just a lot of stuff. We need to talk about education. We kind of missed that on the transformation of government.
Okay.
I put it as a subtitle within that chapter. But education is something, it's on everybody's mind. I'm sure your audience fully understands what Common Core is, and some things are what's wrong with it. Nothing worse for those elected officials than to see a pack of angry mama bears coming at them, you know, because they're messing with their kids. But people understand there's something wrong in education. The technocrats of the 1930s had a lot to say about education. And it was what they called a service sequence of society. Kind of like other services, but you know, education is a service. It's not a manufacturing type of a thing. But the Technocracy Study Course, which is written by M. King Hubbard primarily, talked about education. And he said, the book said, quote, among the service sequences are education. This would embrace the complete training of the younger generation. And, listen to this, this is a direct quote, and public health, medicine, dentistry, public hygiene in all hospitals and pharmaceutical plants, as well as institutions for defectives.
Yeah, and Mr. Wood, if I can jump in here, I have done countless weeks worth of research. I've probably read every government PDF and guidance document on the subject of patient-centric healthcare, electronic health records, the global unique identification device, and all these systems from the National Biosurveillance Project to the brain mapping project that they have going. And there's an executive order that the president signed on the 24th of November in 2009, where he established a bioethics commission. And in the executive order, it said that we would face the intersection of science and human rights. And that's what really got me going down this research road of the RFID chip, or a technology similar to that, which we talked about earlier, categorizes each and every living species and has the potential to give it a mark and make a system out of it, to where if you're not part of the system, as Bible prophecy says, you might not be able to buy or sell. What has your research shown in this area?
Well, I think that's where it's headed. You know, whether it's a visible mark or an invisible mark, that's probably could be discussed a lot, but the point is the ability to buy or sell. That's the main thing. However it's going to happen, it's going to allow the system to kick some people out completely, so that they can't buy or sell. And of course their economic fare would be very poor from that day forward. But people are being conditioned for this. Even now, especially in the education system, to accept this kind of thinking. You know, the Technocracy Study Course wrote about what education should be, and they said that the education system is to train the entire younger generation indiscriminately as regards all considerations other than inherent ability, a continental system of human conditioning. That's what they called it. A continental system of human conditioning. Entire generation now for probably the last 15 years is being conditioned to accept this. It's just incredible. And these poor kids that are walking around, they just don't have a clue. But they're receiving propaganda, not education. And the other thing that's really interesting on how this web is woven together, the Technocracy Study Course also wrote about hospitals and education systems in the same sentence, in the same breath. They said in one place, and this is a direct quote, "There is likewise a complete record on all hospitals, on the education system, amusements, and others, on the more purely social services. This information makes it possible to know exactly what to do at all times in order to maintain the operation of the social mechanism at the highest possible load factor and efficiency." So they brought the topic up that education and healthcare ought to be together. And you know what's interesting? The 400 points of data that's continuously collected with Common Core. Common Core is not about education. It's about the data. Obamacare wants incessant amounts of data on every person that signs up. It's not about your health care. It's about your data. I was shocked to find out down in the bowels of the Affordable Care Act, I actually read it once, like Nancy Pelosi suggested. I'd find out after they passed it. I read it. There is a clause down in the bowels of that document that says the Affordable Care Act provides for establishing government clinics within public schools to act in concert with the school system to provide mental health services, reproductive services, etc., etc. Nobody ever noticed that. Nobody's ever talked about it, to my knowledge. It's there. You can go look it up. It's incredible. But the point I'm bringing up, the history versus what's here now today, is there ain't nothing new under the sun, right? This is not new stuff. This was not new ideas. This was all cooked up back in the 1930s. And we just see it being played out today. But if you wonder, if you want to connect all the dots, and you wonder why stuff is happening today, it's just crazy stuff. If you understand where it's coming from, it makes perfect sense. It really
absolutely
does.
Absolutely. From the new international economic order to the green agenda to Agenda 21, all different systems of total control, you know, one for the economy, one for the religion, one for, you know, the citizens of the earth and, you know, to maintain their carbon footprint. It is all about total control over every aspect of our life, from cradle to grave, from purchase to product.
That's it. Yep. That's a good way to put it. We really haven't talked much about the Trilateral Commission. You think people are, do they have a deficit on that now, or should we try and bring up a little bit about how do they fit in this whole process?
Well, yeah, let's get into that, because my father and me have done extensive research on the Trilateral Commission, me specifically on Zbigniew Brzezinski. I think I have all of his books, even the ones from the 40s and 50s, and that man is a genius. Sadly, I think he is an evil genius, because he has a brilliant mind. It's just used for the worst purposes that you can use one for, from eugenics to what we talked about, total population control. But he is one of the founders of the Trilateral Commission, David Rockefeller being another one. And these are the men behind the agendas, the mentors to the presidents, the advisors to those in power. So let's definitely get into the trilateral commission.
Right. Well, the word trilateral simply comes from the idea that they had members from three different continents. They had North America, Europe, and Japan, where they drew their membership from. Initially in 73, there was only 97 members from the United States, but there were a total of 289 members. And the others were from Europe and from Japan, and included some bankers, industrialists, academics, politicians, media, law firms, some NGOs, a very powerful group of people. They were handpicked. You didn't apply for membership. They picked you based on what they thought you could add to the whole thing. But what happened in 1976, that's just 3 years after the commission was formed, you had Jimmy Carter and Walter Mondale elected president, vice president to the United States government. Both Carter and Mondale were members of the Trilateral Commission. And Carter immediately appointed Brzezinski to be his national security advisor. But he came in as president saying he didn't know anybody in Washington. He didn't know what he's going to do. He was an outside guy. You know, he just a poor country farmer from Georgia. And he didn't know what he's going to do when he got the Beltway. Well, what he did was he stacked his cabinet with members of the Trilateral Commission. That's what he did. At one point in time, all but one member of his cabinet were members of the Trilateral Commission at the same time. It was a hijack, literally, in my opinion. That's one-third, again, of U.S. membership got appointed to top cabinet administration posts by Jimmy Carter. They dominated. And their original policy, of course, was to create a new international economic order. They wanted to promote interdependence. They wanted to promote free trade and all kinds of other stuff. But the book that set the course, what got Brzezinski and Rockefeller together, was Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages. That was published in 1970, and the subtitle to the book is the point, America's Role in the Technotronic Era.
Yep.
And technotronic is a good substitute for the word technocratic. And it was interesting that Brzezinski happened to be a professor of political science. And guess where? This was late 60s and up until 1970. He was a professor of political science at Columbia University, the same place where technocracy was housed in 1932. Isn't that okay? That's just coincidental.
Well, you know, he probably was just you know, starting his teaching career in 1930s at Columbia. Yeah. As old as he is.
Somehow I have a feeling that he, you know, the halls of academia keep talking about stuff long after, you know. I just can't imagine it wasn't still kicking around. But here's what happened with the Trilateral Commission. You say, why did they want the executive branch? Well, here's how it played out. The U.S. Trade Representative, the guy that the president appoints to negotiate all of the trade agreements for Congress, since 1976, there's been 12 appointed USTRs. Nine of them have been members of the Trilateral Commission, including the current one, Michael Froman, who was negotiating TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the Transatlantic Investment Trade Partnership, TTIP. Here's another stat for you. The president also gets to appoint the World Bank president. That's the way it works. The IMF guy comes from Europe. The World Bank president comes from the U.S. There have been eight since Jimmy Carter. Six out of eight have been members of the Trilateral Commission. Okay. Well, the World Bank is the engine of globalization, isn't it? And what kind of better power could you have than to have control over the United States trade mechanism as well as the World Bank? If you wanted to direct the course of affairs in the world, wow. Well, let's look at national security advisors just for a second, too. That's the gatekeeper to the president. Nobody gets to see the president ostensibly, except that it's filtered through the NSA. There have been 17 since Jimmy Carter. 10 out of 17 have been members of the Trilateral Commission. Now, including the current one, by the way, Susan Rice. Carter, or not Carter, but Obama has been surrounded by members of the Trilateral Commission since he stepped into office. He's had as his NSA General James Jones, Tom Donilon, and Susan Rice. All three have been members of the Trilateral Commission. So you see, this is how they got control of the trade mechanism throughout the world. Incredible that they could pull off this kind of hegemony right under our nose, but nobody gets excited about economics. You know, big whoop, that's not exciting.
Yeah, not until the retirement disappears.
I know, not until it all falls apart and everybody's out of work and receiving their energy credits onto their little plastic card or whatever. But this is what they did. And so it shouldn't be any surprise, for instance, when in 1987, there was a commission concluded called the Brundtland Commission that had been sponsored and ordered by the United Nations that produced a book called Our Common Future. That book's still available in print on Amazon. Our Common Future. It was authored primarily by the head of that task force, Gro Harlem Brundtland. She's a European. And she was appointed by the head guy at the UN to do this study, produce this book. It was called the Brundtland Commission. And the United Nations later said, with pride, that were it not for Gro Harlem Brundtland, there would have been no meeting in 1992. There would be no publication of Agenda 21. There would be no doctrine on sustainable development were it not for Gro Harlem Brundtland. And she was the one that chaired the task force that ended in 1987. 5 years later, the first Earth Conference took place, and Agenda 21 popped out here right today. Let me tell you, Gro Harlem Brundtland, you won't be surprised at this, she was a member of the Trilateral Commission. Bingo. You see, this whole thing, everywhere you look, these people's fingerprints are on, if you will, the dead body. That's a bad way to put it. But everywhere you look, their fingerprints are on it. And it's unmistakable. The lady that, the USTR that wrote up NAFTA, the chief architect of NAFTA, was a member of the Trilateral Commission. So was George H.W. Bush that put her up to it. So was Bill Clinton that shoved it down our throats after he got elected. Everything has happened to us along the way. You see these people's fingerprints, and it's unmistakable, absolutely unmistakable. And the Trilateral Commission has been the vehicle. It's not just they're solely their idea, but they are the mechanism that has been used to make it happen. And here we are today.
They set the agenda that the elected officials carry out, or at least read from their teleprompters. They're the people that are behind the powerful elected ones.
They're the shadow government. The guy that gave Obama all of his climate change policy is Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, John Podesta.
Mm-hmm.
John Podesta is a member of the Trilateral Commission. I think he's one of the guys. I compare him to Henry Kissinger. He's that bad.
That's pretty bad.
That's pretty bad. He's a snake in the grass. And he single-handed, this is, the New York Times even said this, he single-handedly crafted the president's climate change policy, the clean energy policy, and he's the guy that did it, folks. He's a member of the Trilateral Commission. Now he's overrunning Hillary's campaign. And I'm glad to report that just this week it was announced that the FBI and the Department of Justice is investigating John Podesta and his brother, who together have one of the largest, most nefarious lobbying firms in Washington, D.C., named after themselves. And they're being investigated for all kinds of stuff right now. That's wonderful. I hope they go down with Hillary. Maybe they can get the same jail cell.
Maybe they can find some intent this time.
Yeah, really. like how about, you know, in this case, the scope of this is somebody is trying to steal the entire planet. This is true.
Yes,
they're trying to steal the entire planet. It's not just about, you know, that 1,000 acres out in Montana anymore. It's, hey, let's go for the whole enchilada. Let's get it all.
Yeah. Folks, read the UN Charter. Read their, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Charter of the United Nations, and their goal and conquest of international law, international courts and tribunals, and as we talked about earlier on this show and throughout the show, the total control of all resources, and obviously their goals, they make it sound so much better than what it is. They're going to, destroy poverty. They're going to have equality not only in employment but in classes in society. They're going to lessen natural disasters, on and on and on, end terrorism and other humanitarian crisis. These are all excuses that sound wonderful, but are obviously just to get their foot in the door, to get that total control. And as the Bible says, the liberal will devise, liberal things, and they will steal even from the poorest of the poor. And I'm paraphrasing out of Isaiah there. But these are the people, the same agenda, who tried to build the Tower of Babel. And they left having their languages confounded and being separated into 70 different nations. But the agenda was never ended. It was still in place, and we see that happening today. Mr. Wood, we have about 3 minutes before the break, and when we come back from the break, if we can get into what can we do as individuals, and especially the Christian religion, what can we expect to see in Christianity, both inside the church and with the remnant Christians who are out there trying to bring awareness and spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to others. And if we can also talk about or at least touch on the smart grid technology, and this is something my dad wanted to bring up, the smart meters, what role those play in this technocracy of in agenda of total control.
Sounds good. I'm ready for it. One of my favorite topics.
Well, we have just a few minutes before the break.
Okay.
What do you have coming up? Do you have any new projects, books? You got any big interviews on the horizon?
I am working on my next book in a series. It will continue the Technocracy Rising meme, but it will have a different subtitle. So kind of like Harry Potter and the blank, 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 whatever. It's like,
okay,
I would have Technocracy Rising and the Evil Witch from, no, I don't know what it's going to be. But I am in process of writing it, and my working title is going to be something comparable to The Emerging Cult of Science. And I do believe that there's unmistakable markers that technocracy and transhumanism share a common religious foundation, and it is turning into a religion. And I think that's something that needs to be explored.
It's very sad and scary, folks. And transhumanism, we've covered that on this show several times, but if you look at the logo, it is an H in this, the letter H in a circle with a plus sign next to it. And when we look in the Bible, when it says, that they worship the creation more than the creator, when they turned what God made into what God made as incorruptible, they turned into corruptible. I didn't say that right, but folks, you understand what I'm saying. They have perverted God's creation and continue to do so. And transhumanism, at least for the human beings who are alive, are those who are trying to escape going to hell, or escape the afterlife, which the Lord has created. And you go to heaven or you go to hell. These people think they can be immortal, as the first lie they told Adam and Eve in the garden is that you can be as gods and you can be immortal. The fallen angels, the Nephilim, the evil spirits, have an idea that they can storm heaven and defeat God. And at the same time, they're selling a lie to the human beings that through computers and the merger of man and machine, they can escape death and escape the eternal damnation that is to come. And these people are buying it up left and right as they are afraid of what can happen when Jesus returns. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Thursday edition with author Patrick Wood. And let me tell you something, this is a very fun interview that we're doing tonight. His book, Technocracy Rising, that's Technocracy Rising, talks about the dark horse of the New World Order. And it's not what you think it is. It's not communism. It's not socialism. It is technocracy. And it starts with a new international economic order and moves to total control of everything that we consume, do, and even say. And we see this happening today right before our eyes. Patrick's website is technocracy.news. Folks, go to technocracy.news, bookmark the site, sign up for the free newsletter, get his book on Amazon, paperback, or Kindle. We'll be right back. Destination total human enslavement, ruled by a handful of oligarchs. That is the vision of the powers that be who are human in the darkness, the spirits of darkness that are behind the agenda and the people of evil in this world. We are talking with author Patrick Wood, his book Technocracy Rising. Folks, again, go to his website, sign up for his free newsletter. His website is technocracy.news, and you can get his book on Kindle and on paperback at Amazon. Just go to his website, technocracy.news. He's been gracious enough to spend 2.5 hours with us already, and it's been a very informative 2.5 hours. We got one segment left. We're going to hit it hard in this last segment, and Mr. Wood, I'm going to turn it back over to you and let you get us started.
Yeah, that's good. Let me throw out a topic that we alluded to at the beginning called scientism. I think it's important that people understand the mentality behind a lot of this stuff. Actually, the primary, I think the primary idea. We talked about Henri, that's Henri de Saint-Simon, and he is considered the father of technocracy. He also was one of the first people to write about scientism. And here's what he said. This is a direct quote from one of his papers. A scientist, my dear friends, is a man who foresees. It is because science provides the means to predict that it is useful. And scientists are superior to all other men. Close quote. We're not dealing with just parlor room discussion here. This is an evil statement that science has the means, a crystal ball, to predict the future, or that scientists are superior to all other men. This is dangerous, dangerous, dangerous thinking. So what does scientism boil down to? Well, it boils down to the application of scientific methods to social and political modeling. It means that science, they believe this, science is the absolute and only access to truth and reality about man and the universe, specifically opposed to the Bible as truth. It believes there is no God, of course. It's predictive, able to foretell the future. They really believe this. It rejects any inquiry that does not agree with it. That's why Al Gore can say, deniers need to be punished. It demands acceptance by non-scientists. That's incredible. And scientism has a priesthood. both Saint Simone and August Comte promoted a priesthood. They talked about this, a priesthood of scientists and engineers to administer and administrate science upon society. And I conclude it's a religion that worships science and the scientific method, exclusive of other competing religions. And it predicts the future and requires a priesthood to declare its truth to the ignorant masses. That's scientism. That's at the base of both technocracy and transhumanism. You're just animals, they say. The technocracy study course on page 211. Just make your hair just stand up. Hubbard wrote, "The human animal responds to its external environment through the mechanisms of the conditioned reflex, which is a purely automatic but tremendously complex nervous control mechanism. These conditioned reflexes are, however, subject to control and manipulation through the device of manipulating an individual's environment. An individual's present conditioning is always the result of all of his own past experiences." I could go on with this. This is absolutely off the rails thinking. I don't know. I want people to understand the importance of what we're talking about here.
Absolutely.
This is not just parlor talk. This is not just political discourse. This is not just a group of academics discussing ideas, you know, smoking cigars and drinking old scotch. No. These people are absolutely off the rails in their thinking. Humans are just animals that respond to external environment by conditioning. Oh, so we're being conditioned, aren't we? Yes, we are.
Through our human nature. Yep.
You know, these people and this ideology is so evil that when you finally grasp what it means, I will guarantee you, even if you are not a Christian, you will have the reaction that you're looking straight into the face of hell. That's why we're concerned about this stuff. It's really serious. It's really a big thing. Mm-hmm. And people need to just spend the time to wrap their head around it so they can
Absolutely.
Figure out what they should do.
Absolutely. And for those of you who are Christians out there, Jesus said it best, fear not that person who can take your life, but fear that man who can take your soul. And,
That's right.
you know, these people will come for your life. They're seeking to control your life, but we have the courage to stand up and to face these evil people, not only to face them, but to proclaim the salvation and saving grace of Jesus as he laid the groundwork and gave the example for us. But at the same time, he told us to resist evil constantly. And this is something as Christians we need to be very aware of. And not only that, we need to help our fellow Christian understand the time that we live in and the dangers of the times that we live in.
Indeed. And I suppose we ought to talk about some practical solutions, because I believe there are some.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's not going to be by electing a certain person to go to Washington, D.C. It's not That's going right. to be, I just don't think it's going to happen that way. Yeah, like you said before, it's like hiring a new pastor for your church, and you pay him a bunch of money to go out and do what you should be doing, you know, namely talking mm-hmm. to your own neighbors about, you know, the Bible and Christianity and Christ and so on. But you're satisfied paying the pastor the big bucks. Hey, let him do it, man. I'm just fat, I'm fat, happy out here in a pew and whatever. You know, I don't want to do anything. I want to hire him to do it. I give my tithe, and I'm relieved of responsibility. That's the way people look at our
now. Yeah.
I know. People look at our national leaders the same way. I don't need to do anything, but I'm going to work like a dog to get so-and-so elected or, you know, this congressman or that senator or whatever, and I'm going to just put all this time and effort in. And because once they get in, man, they'll take care of my needs. So that's not the way life works, folks. It's just not.
No. And look at Obama and the promises he made. Oh, my rent will be paid. I don't have to pay a car payment anymore. Remember those people? And see, we're worse off now than we were before he was elected.
Yeah, exactly. So all of this Agenda 21, 2030 agenda stuff, which we haven't really talked about yet, but maybe another show someday. All of this stuff has trickled down into every single community in America, bar none. It's everywhere. Thanks to President Bill Clinton's reinventing government, he has spread this stuff, and the President's Council on Sustainable Development, he has spread this agenda to every single solitary political unit in our country. Town, city, county, areas. It's everywhere. And there are people who are applying these principles to your community right now as we speak. And you wonder why things are going wrong in your own community. But here's where the mentality needs to change. People need to get up off their couch, turn off the TV, and go down and start attending their city council meetings. Take a video camera along with you and tape it. Find out what they're doing. Go meet your city manager. You can do that. If you live in a city, it's your right. Go meet your city manager. Find out what he's doing. Request that they give you copies of the contracts that they signed with outside consultants. Find out what your county zoning commission is doing to take away your property rights. This is all part and parcel of Agenda 21. You see, any community that can clean up its own house, and that can be done. You can't get your hands on anybody in Washington. You can't. You know you can't. That's why I yell at the TV. You can get your hands on your city elected people and your city civil servants. You know where they are. They live in your community, most of them. You can go and see them in their offices. You can meet with them. They're accessible. You can confront them in public meetings that you have, that your city has all the time. You've got to be willing to do this and get out there and mix it up in your own community, because believe me, if you run sustainable development / technocracy / green economy / whatever you want to call it out of your own community, you will send a message up the food chain that they're in trouble.
Yeah, you will. And folks, many of you remember attorney and friend Billy Bear, who was on our show, attended a school board meeting in New Jersey where he is a parent of a child that pertained to Common Core, and he was arrested for asking a question. And I bring that up just to let people know that this is not going to be an easy fight, but you have power in numbers. You know, if you can bring more than one person with you to these events when you ask the questions and bring the cameras, make sure that you have people who understand what you're doing, who will support you, so they can't let that happen. So it's not just one person that they're trying to drag out. Instead, it would be, you know, a whole section of people. Because when people are so uninformed that the one informed person looks like, you know, is made to look like a crazy person, they have no problem getting them dragged out by the police, and the rest of the people just sit there, you know, wondering what's going on. It takes an informed populace to make the difference.
Indeed it does, and there are lots of things that people can do. I could give you several stories just in recent days where people have been successful at driving out horrendous policies that were being brought in by deception and just by trickery. And they confronted these people, they confounded them, and in one case in Southern California, a fairly large city in Southern California, the city manager got canned, and the city plant, one of the city planters quit. And I mean, they raised havoc within this little group of people who thought they were so smug, you know, at bringing all this stuff in. They're trying to write a general plan that was going to convert the city into an Agenda 21 city with sustainable development. Sustainable this and sustainable that. And, you know, they completely upended the policy and sent them packing. Anybody can do that across our country. It just takes people that will, and I won't even use the word patriot. Forget that. Don't put labels on it. Are you an American? It's your community. What do you want for it? Do you care? I mean, maybe you don't care. You don't care about your community, whether it's a cesspool or not. Some people don't care about the houses they live in. You know, they're just, you know, junkyards, yeah, basically. But hey, if you don't care, then you keep go turn on your TV. But I tell you, there are enough people, I think, that still care, that will be willing to get up off their rumps and get out in the community and start mixing it up.
And that's so important you bring that up, because this is something we hit on occasionally here on our show, is that the indifference. You know, we see the indifference in the Christian church, and Jesus said that I'd rather you be hot or cold, but because you are indifferent, I will spew you out of my mouth. And we see this with the, you know, the rise of this satanic religion. And when we look at the Christian religion, it doesn't seem like people are as motivated, as engaged, or care about it as much, and fight for it as hard as people from the satanic religion or from these LGBT groups. And what these people in the Agenda 20, Transforming Our World 2030, the Agenda 2030, they are ambitious. They are working to take what you are indifferent to. And even in their own words, they say that their new agenda requires a global partnership that will ensure implementation. They say the partnership will work in a spirit of global solidarity, and particular solidarity with the poorest of people in vulnerable situations. They will facilitate global engagement in support of these implementation goals and targets, and bring together the governments, private sectors, and civil society, along with the United Nations system and other actors, in mobilizing all available resources. So, whether you care about it or not, these people do care about it. Not only do they care about it, they're doing something to make it happen.
That's right. And, you know, Aldous Huxley wrote another book about Brave New World in 1958. Most people never tracked on this. It was called Brave New World Revisited. That was some decades after he wrote his first one in 1932.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, you should go pick that book up. It's still out there. You got a used copy of it somewhere. Brave New World Revisited from 1958. And here's what he said. This is kind of scary, but here's what he said. The older dictators fell because they could never supply their subjects with enough bread, enough circuses, enough miracles and mysteries. Under a scientific dictatorship, education will really work, with the result that most men and women will grow up to love their servitude and will never dream of revolution. There seems to be no good reason why a thoroughly scientific dictatorship should ever be overthrown. Close quote.
Wow.
Now, yeah, I'd like to prove him wrong on that, because we need to not let it get established, that in the first thing. But when you find somebody in your community that is given over to this philosophy, who thinks that he's better than everybody else and that he's going to tell everybody else what to do, and that he's going to, you know, scientifically engineer your community for your own good, you need to get across a table from a guy like that, or a woman, and say, ma'am or sir, I have great respect for you as a member of our community, but I want you to look in my eyes as I say this to you about what you're doing here. And you need to look him straight in the eyes, don't break eye contact, and you need to say to him, I just want you to know I will fight you until hell freezes over, and then I will fight you on the ice.
I like that.
That's what you need to tell And then you need to do that. Don't back off. Don't give up. Don't wimp out. Don't get tired. You know, you need to stick with it and do it, because that's the kind of resolve they have against you.
Mm-hmm.
See, they look at you as a sucker, a pansy, a wimp, a wuss, whatever. You know, somebody who doesn't care. They're home watching Monday Night Football while we're having this meeting down here. They're, you know, these people need to be challenged. They're in
Absolutely.
It for keeps. They're in it for keeps. And if they are successful at establishing this scientific dictatorship like they clearly intend to do, Huxley's prediction might well come true. There might be no good reason why it should ever be overthrown, honestly, because the old people are going to die off. Now, you're still pretty young, Joe, I know that, but your dad will appreciate what I'm saying. When the old guard is gone, those who can say that to people like this, that were there, they know what America was before, etc. When the old guard dies off, the young generation, a bunch of iPhone-worshipping geeks that don't know anything about life at all, they're going to be the ones that just walk right into scientific dictatorship, think it's wonderful. They'll only be concerned about the next model of iPhone that they're going to get.
That's right.
Or the next Very version true. Of Pokemon.
Yeah. This Pokemon Go. You know, we got about 7 minutes left. And just a few things, if we can, while we have time. Just quick comments. Pokemon Go, is this just a game, or is there something much more sinister to this?
I think it's a kind of a transition thing that's happening right now. I think the other shoe is yet to drop on whatever, you know, whatever's happening on a global basis with Pokemon Go. I think there's another shoe that's going to drop. I think it's going to have something to do with virtual reality.
Yep.
Which is coming on like a freight train right now. So, I'm just watching for that. I'm not looking at Pokemon Go as the end of the whole thing. I think that there's a greater trap that's being set for the young people in the world, and I don't know that we know what that is yet.
Another question. I've seen articles in the last few months, and they seem to continue to increase from, you know, being able to change the sensors in your brain. An example is turning off the parts of your brain that deal with your belief system, so shutting off your belief towards God, and nanobots. There's a new article today talks about mind-controlled nanobots could release drugs inside your brain. In the article, it gets into technology being used to control your brain activity. They say a technique that may be useful for treating brain disorders such as schizophrenia and ADHD, but I mean, is that what can they do with this nanotechnology, and can they control your mind through these nanobots?
Well, it hasn't been demonstrated that nanobots in particular can control your mind or sections of it, because they really haven't been created yet that can be inserted in and travel through, you know, very small capillaries and stuff like that. It's probably one day it's probably going to come, and they write about that. I mean, that's what they're shooting for. Ray Kurzweil wants to develop a series of nanobots that will actually go into your mind and filtrate your mind and give it collectively the ability to download your mind onto an external computer. He thinks it's really going to happen someday. I think he's crazy, but, you know, that's just me. Sometimes I go overboard, you know. But, yeah, that's what they want to do. But having said that, there are lots of ways, lots of technologies now that are being used to control the mind that don't have to do with nanobots. That's exactly what Obama's brain research, you know, brain map program is all about.
The
brain initiative. He said very pointedly, as mapping the genome was to, you know, that scientific field, we want to map the human brain and find out exactly how it's working. Now, they're working on that diligently right now. There's been lots of breakthroughs already, lots of discoveries. And, of course, the transhuman movement, is encouraging the government to spend truckloads of money in grants and stuff to go out to fund all this stuff. Because they're smelling pay dirt, like, hey man, we're gonna really do it this time once we figure out how to, what the human brain is all about. Why, wow, we can do all kinds of stuff.
And so, what was interesting to me is I saw that there is the Methuselah project, and Methuselah was a biblical figure who was, I believe it was Enoch's grandfather or Noah's grandfather, was the oldest living person in the Bible, 969 right. years old. Just found it very interesting. They used his name to talk about extending human life well beyond the natural order of things. Just 3 more minutes left. I got 2 questions for you. CERN. Do you have any opinions on CERN and what they are doing as far as trying to open portals and discover and utilize dark matter?
Well, I've looked at CERN. I follow CERN for a while. I've read a bunch of stuff about CERN. In fact, I've already talked about it in my upcoming book already as an example. I don't have a lot of opinion on things like portals, dark matter, or opening up wormholes to the other side of the universe. I really don't. Not to say it can't happen. I'm just saying I don't have a big opinion on it. I do believe, however, that many of the scientists that are involved in CERN have a very religious bent, not a scientific bent, a religious bent to do things that are not necessarily directly related to science, but they're more related to religion. That's greatly disturbing.
Yes, it is.
So, There's a lot of funny business going on with the belief system and stuff over there. If they, in my mind, if they just wanted to practice science, like I've known a couple of physicists in my life, the good people. If they just wanted to practice their discipline, their science, I probably wouldn't have a problem with anything they did. If they were just normal people, just doing scientific experiments and advancing the cause of physics and whatever, I would say, fine, man, if you got a brain for it, go figure it out and tell us what it meant. That's not the way these people think. That's not the way these people think at all. They have
You're exactly right. Yeah, they do. Closing question here, and this is you can just yes or no this or get into it a little bit if you want. The chance of a national cyber attack that would cripple our power grid and or banking system. Is that that's plausible in the next year or two?
I'll tell you my opinion. In light of technocracy, that would be the last thing in the world they would ever allow to happen.
Okay.
Because how can you control energy if you wipe out the energy grid? How can you control people if you wipe out the computers? You can't. Their infrastructure is dependent upon energy and computing power. That's their entire life has been poured into infrastructure. I can't imagine that they're not going to protect it with their very lives.
Okay. And that makes sense. I understand that. And I thank you for answering those questions. Mr. Wood, we have reached the end of the program. You have filled all 3 hours with just fantastic information and content. Folks, Technocracy Rising, you must get this book. Go to Patrick Wood's website at technocracy.news, and you can sign up for his free newsletter, bookmark the site, get the book on Amazon. You can get it on Kindle edition as well as paperback, and it's got great reviews, and I've read it twice. I'm going to read it again. It ties so much of what is going on in our world to what we don't really see, but we can tell by reading between the lines. Mr. Wood, I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been a pleasure. I hope we can have you back on sometime here in the near future. And if there's anything that you need from us, you just give us a call.
Well, Joe, I sure appreciate it. I appreciate your time and dedication to the program to have me on. And, I would say whenever and wherever I can offer the information that I have for people who want it, I'm willing to do that. I'm dedicated to that. So, anytime you have an issue or, if there's something I can contribute to the discussion, I'd be glad to be at your service.
Thank you so much, Mr. Patrick Wood. You have a great evening, and we will talk soon.
Thank you, sir.
That'll do it for us tonight, folks. Again, that was Patrick Wood, Technocracy Rising. Get his book, technocracy.news. That'll do it for us tonight. Tomorrow night, Dr. Ted Breuer of healthmasters.com will be our guest. That's Dr. Ted Breuer, closing out the week strong. Thanks, each and every one of you, for joining us tonight. We will see you tomorrow.